Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello!
Our super producer, Bryce Castillo.
Hi. Oh, I'm down on the second billing now. Okay. Hello. Welcome.
and
of course,
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
That's my new catchphrase.
I have two things I want to talk about. The second thing, if we don't get to it, that's fine. The first thing I want to talk about is this. I bought something last week. I bought it because it was cool, and I bought it because it was an experiment, and I bought it because I thought it was a neat sort of thing, and I also bought it because, hey, maybe something we could talk about on After Things. And, you know, there's this thing when you make things or you do stuff and you do it for an audience, and then you're like, hey, this is great. I got this audience. I think I'm kind of at the limits here, and I could do something really radical to find a new audience for the thing I do, where I can maybe find a new thing. For me, it was books. I wrote sci-fi, but I said, you know what? I'm going to do thriller mystery. I went from sci-fi to thriller mystery because far more people read thriller mystery, and that was a big step up for me. Now, a friend of the show, you may have heard of him, Brian Brushwood, released a product.
Yes.
On scam stuff.
Yes.
Which is this puzzle box themed around Harry Houdini.
Yeah.
Harry Houdini puzzle box. And it was, and I thought, like, it's a lot of like what I did. It was a bold step to say, hey, oh, is this a trailer for it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Commercial. I haven't seen this.
Oh yeah. No, Bryce put it together. So we, you know, we kick off with like a little 40-second intro thing. Bryce sort of spends hours getting different shots, just trying to figure out how to tell the story and make it something that, you know, basically he's his own wood whisperer. He listens to the box and then makes it sing.
Yeah, it's I think this took maybe 3 or 4 hours to shoot, just in terms of getting all of this footage.
For the audio listeners, if you haven't seen it, you can go to scamstuff.com. But basically, it's the most jam packed puzzle box we've released yet, with a whole bunch of goodies on the inside, themed around Harry Houdini.
But yeah, it's got like little bars on the front, and you can see Harry's face laser etched in it, and so on.
And I promise you, this was not meant as an infomercial for Brian. but it was this you know, you've been doing really well with scam stuff. You've come up with really cool stuff. But I imagine you reach a point, you know, like you have anything. Like, we've talked to entertainers, our podcasters, and you're like, hey, I'm at the limit of this niche. Now, I might be able to just grow this, but I'm looking over the fence there, and man, there's a lot more there. There's a lot more there. Maybe I take what I know here and I apply it out there.
That, to be honest, is why we previously, all of the puzzle boxes have been Brian Brushwood themed or Scam School themed or whatever. And if you received one as a gift, there would be this moment of like, oh, well, there's this show and this thing and there's a deck of cards and you should care, because also the show's good. Like, this was designed to be approachable to the outside. It's the first puzzle box that we did that. It's also why we developed the Modern Rogue as an intellectual property, because Scam School is like, okay, what's bigger than Scam School? Well, then we came up with the, you know, Gentleman Warrior Scoundrel thing, where it's like, now Scam School is sort of a sub-neighborhood of a much broader archetype of this idea of being the ultimate Modern Rogue.
I think, because that's one of the things you sort of run into in magic, is that, you know, there's the express, you know, if you have 10 great tricks, you know, you can be a pro and work a lot and do that. A lot of people get into magic because they love the process of learning something new. Not that they ever have any, they'll go do it for their family and friends. And that's a big part of the magic audience, is really, there's the comment, like, you know, amateurs change their tricks and the audience stay the same. Pros change their audiences, the tricks stay the same. It's a little bit condescending, because it's sort of, you know, it's like, yeah, oh, you only play your guitar for your family and friends. Ooh, you know, look at you, loser. It's like, yeah, no, they love it, you know, we hope. And I think that's the thing, is there's that one of the things, a niche in magic that isn't always sort of recognize is like a lot of what you're doing is like what I did, you did, is like I'm creating stuff for people who want something new. They just want something new to play with. And it's not all because we're all going to be pros like I am. It's like, no, I want to learn a new song to play. You know, I want to learn a new thing. And that's part of the experience. I think that's the difference sometimes. Amateur originally meant for the love of. But here, I thought this was just, I just, you know, I thought it was sort of neat thinking and doing that.
Yeah. Do you have a take in that in your life, Justin?
I'll let you know when I find it.
Okay. All
right. Well, but to your, getting into board games and stuff, trying to take some of your passions and stuff and saying, let me go outside of the, you know, because you were a podcaster and you did this thing, but then you've created content now that exists for people who have no idea who you are.
Yeah. No. That is totally true. Between Contender and Action News, it put me into play in a, you know, another subgenre, but certainly one that is hungry to buy, and that is awesome. It was a great opportunity to go and do it, and you know, very often it creates as many, you know, questions and problems and challenges as it, you know, as it does benefits. But no, totally. I mean, that's a much larger niche. And then even then from there, you're trying to figure out with John and I what we want to do next is even kind of another challenge of like, all right, well, you know, we have Contender and Contender sells, and Contender will specifically kind of did well in the midterms. It'll do well this Christmas. It'll do well specifically over the next 2 years as politics again becomes something that is, you know, more on the tips of people's tongues than it already has been. But then the question is, all right, well, do we do another politics game? Do we take this branding that we have and kind of expand into like apparel or you know, other kind of identifiers of in a more politically aware world where people want to buy and identify themselves more than ever, even if it's just as somebody who's politically active or literally just wants a cool pin or shirt or hat that, you know, shows that they are inclined on such a level. So that's kind of where we're going now is just trying to figure out for these next 2 years where we take this, you know, even in the Contender world, which was broader than the podcasting world, how we even go kind of farther than that.
Well, and also with the new podcast series you're working on.
So, sure. Yeah. And that is in the podcast genre. There's only so many people that want to listen to my unvarnished opinion week by week. And the great vast majority of hit podcasts right now are either spinoffs of other popular radio shows or spinoffs of the podcast versions of the popular radio shows or single use.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
Yes. Thought I hit the mute button on that one. Sorry about that.
Twice. Number two.
Dear Microsoft, I would like to have bigger mute buttons in Skype.
Tell you, dude.
Tell about it. What you really think about podcasts?
Here's my pick. It's a cough drop button. that physical cough drop button. That's my pick for this week.
I would screw that up too, Brian.
Oh my god.
So anyway. yeah, I would like to do a show where more people would listen to it. You know, I don't know. I mean, like since my co-hosts find everything I say so interesting that they want to love and support me.
I had a runny nose. I blew my nose and I missed the mute button.
It's fine. It's fine.
I asked the question. I prompted you for this.
I know. Just to bait me out. Just to wait for I can be vulnerable. Just to blow your nose.
I'm like, wait for it. Wait for it. Now.
No. I mean, so yeah, I do think that that's, you know, it's a a larger question of kind of how you draw those lines and then how do you execute on it. And with Modern Rogue, I think for Brian, that was kind of an answer to the question of like, and I'm going to put it in a very base level that ignores all of the subtlety and brand building that kind of went into it. But it's like, why don't you do prank videos on Scam School? Right? Because that's not Scam School. Scam School is you teach a trick and you can do other wider things. And although you don't want to do prank videos on the Modern Rogue, right, this gives you the ability to look at other wider trends and say, oh, okay, well, we can do our spin on this. Like if the ice bucket challenge was a thing with now the Modern Rogue in full spin, you could figure out the Modern Rogue version of the ultimate cool thing that you could do. Like how long can you last in hypothermic thing? That's a very
hot charcoal briquette challenge.
Yeah. You know, and you know, you can do the reverse ice bucket challenge where you're in ice cold water for however long you're able to do it, because that's the aesthetic of the Modern Rogue. Where that was a very, from your perspective, watching you build that brand, it was kind of brilliant to say, all right, well, what do people latently want from Scam School in a way that would probably even piss them off if we started to, we would piss off a core audience if we all of a sudden took Scam School and made it into this broader kind of channel. How can we do that in a bigger, cooler way that doesn't, that simultaneously gives people what they might want, but also unshackles us from having to say, oh, and this is the double lift.
Right. There's a lot to be said for stopping and looking around at going, like, what am I good at? You know, what am I really good at? And it's not, sometimes it's, you can be specific, like, Brian's really good at teaching magic on YouTube.
Oh, no. Yeah, right? That's the conclusion, not the foundation. Like, if you're looking at the core bits, because this is why I quit my day job and decided to be a magician, is because I did an honest assessment of what I thought of as my natural gifts. I don't mind talking to people. I seem to be able to get up in front of an audience. I seem to be able to tell a joke. I love being mischievous and all that stuff. Things I'm not good at, tediously working on bone placement in character animation software for 14 hours at a stretch, you know. And as I evaluated all of my natural gifts, it's like, well, it just seems like you should be doing magic for a living, or at least give it a try. And then out of that came, you know, I eventually learned how to be good at teaching magic on the internet. But first, as we've talked about before, you have to be bad before you become good. I had to learn how to talk to the camera and all that stuff. But all of it played to those core abilities of being present enough and being able to speak extemporaneously and, I don't know, occasionally being funny and so on.
Well, and so I guess my point must be that, like, in the process of doing the show, though, you became very good at explaining things on the internet or explaining right. things on TV. And that was like, oh, yeah, I can explain magic, but like, let's get rid of the magic. Like, oh, yeah, I can explain other stuff too. I have to tell you, you know, what this card shuffle means, what this means, which could be science, it could be other things. And that sometimes you want to step back and go, oh, yeah, if I take off that the last thing here that that defines me and I get to the core things, that the strengths, you realize, wow, you have there's a lot of skills there that could be used. And then it's figuring out where you want to go with it. I think Justin's kind of going, obviously going through this point where it's like a lot of skills, a lot of possibilities, but it's now what?
Yeah. And part of the lesson in 2018 for me was figuring out that I had to kind of cull some stuff. And it wasn't that I was necessarily that I didn't like it or that I wasn't good at it. It was just that I needed to put effort into places where I knew there were growth opportunities. And not to say that these other things weren't, but, it was something had to go. There's only so much time in the day. And I've really, really, I mean, so many of my lessons that I've learned have come from you two guys and watching how the dedication that Andrew puts in to when he's got something that he wants to do, like it really is, there's no substitution to I'm putting all my effort into something, even if it's for like a blocked off time, like, this is what I am doing. I am, you know, I'm getting this done. I want to test, you know, this personal trainer that I was seeing was talking to me about cardio. And it's like, a lot of people think that cardio is just a good thing to do, like, every time. And sure, it gets your blood pumping for a little bit. But if you really want to train for cardio, you should always be pushing yourself to your limit. You should be finding where your limit is and pushing it forward like any other exercise. Like, it's just, people think of it as just kind of a you know, steps to walk through. And that's something that, you know, Andrew and his writing career, I mean, Jesus, to watch when you know, the dedication put into, like, all right, well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to write a thing. I'm going to find out how fast it takes me to plot a thing, to write a thing. It's not, nothing's ever going to be rushed, right? Everything's going to get done. But if I'm not focusing on the craft and the engine is something that I always like to think of metaphorically, of like, hey, look, think of it as a CPU or as a car engine or something like that, but it's either going to run efficiently or it's not. And you're either going to think of ways that you are making it run efficiently or you're not. And that was a thing that I had to realize, was like, all right, well, number one, there's just a necessity in me saying I make money on X amount of things, right? And I've stitched together X amount of things to make that money, right? And then there's, I have to focus on, if I want to carve out a niche where now I also do two or three of these kind of anthology series a year, and it's taken me forever from when I had the idea to researching it to actually putting it together, then that means I'm stretched thin. And be it a time in the day situation or a burnout situation, I just need to be honest to my machine. I have to be honest to myself. And part of it is making hard decisions to say, like, hey, look, I got to shut down my involvement in a couple shows to say, look, let me see what that does. Let me see how that affects everything. And it's hard. It's hard because there's the decisions that Andrew's talking about and Brian are talking about, to me, have way more to do with honesty and understanding yourself than it necessarily has to do with hard work or hustle. The hard work and hustle are just going to be there or they're not, right? It's the honesty of who you are and what you do and what makes you happy and where you can go and understanding the playing field before you that you really need to even apply the hard work and hustle to say, like, oh no, well, this is the North Star. And so now I'm walking toward it and then making all the decisions that go on around it.
It's hard. It is hard to sort of go, hey, I could do this, I could do this, and to say where to focus, because you don't know. You don't know what's the thing that's going to make it or whatever, and that's hard. So I'd say the second part of what I would do, I was going to say, is like, what advice would you give yourself 3 years ago?
Oh, wow.
Bryce, you get to jump in on this stuff too.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, Bryce, stop talking.
No. Well, I mean, because 3 years ago, I was 1 year into working here.
Wow. It's been 4 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Coming up in January.
Yeah, it's tough. One of the weird things that happens when you get older is you tend to stick to a few core ideas. You know, you don't wildly change the epiphanies. There's a few more years before when they hit you or whatever. So even 3 years ago, it feels like, I guess the only advice I would give myself for 3 years ago is move Modern Rogue to its own channel earlier.
Or just, like, start Modern Rogue earlier. Because when I started here, part of the reason I came here was to help start Modern Rogue.
Right.
And it would be over a year until
Modern Rogue got started. Able to do that. And to be honest, what I should have done, that's the other advice I would have said, is Modern Rogue didn't, it just kept being words I was saying until I picked up the phone and I told Jason Murphy, I was like, I'm PayPaling you this 4-digit number. Your job is to cause these to no longer be words and force us to start recording. Mm-hmm. And so he came up with ideas, and then we got the first episode banged out. Yeah. And it was getting, I wish I hadn't taken a full extra year to get over the hump of the fear of like, no, it's just such a good idea. I want to do it right. And it's like, done is better than perfect. Right. And we moved, I wish we had moved to done earlier.
And I would probably, like, if we're talking about giving ourselves advice 3 years ago, I would probably give myself something. Like, I'm starting to work on some personal projects now of my own, but they're the first, like, actual things that I've been working on in, like, kind of in earnest in since I moved down here. I've mostly been working on the business stuff. And so I I feel good to start making new stuff. And I wish I wasn't waiting as long as I had. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess on the Austin front, unified thing is time is a resource. Right. And it's burning whether you're using it or not.
Well, and I think Brian, for you, without getting too much into kind of inside baseball, a lot of those modern rogue decisions were also tied to
the TV show. Your
TV show and your relationship with the Scam School channel and a lot of those kind of behind the scenes decisions where I think it took a little while for modern rogue to be its own franchise and not kind of the many other things that it could be. A fantasy idea, a partial fantasy project to carry on the Hacking the System thing with Jason, leverage play. Like, there were a lot of other kind of like reasons why it should and could and will exist. And it took a year for it to be like, oh no, this is a new franchise. It is not like, yes, it might've been born of these other things, but it's like, it deserves the time, effort, and attention that kind of go into it and not all the other like miasma of like, oh, okay, well, it should be started for X, Y, Z, and where do we put it and how does it go? Like all these things that ultimately you build up in your head and agonize about, but they're 5-second decisions. Whether or not they're good or bad, you can fix them down the road. Like it's always, you know, the faulty lesson is always, and it's, man, I have gone through this with this stupid podcast a million times, like just trying to in my head think of like, oh, but it needs to be like this, but it has to be like that, but it has to be this, and I need to get better at doing this kind of thing. And so
have you, been doing a lot of research for your historical podcast. Have you recorded any seconds?
So here's the thing that I haven't really even shared with you guys is like, I wound up doing a bunch of different voice samples to do kind of like my 10-minute pilot, mm-hmm. basically, which would effectively not only be me testing out voices and how things should go and how much production needs to go into it, where the music should be, like all these things that I don't know how to do. Like normally I am from, you know, the very specific school of podcasting, which is forget production, like literally just do it live, get it out
live to tape.
Like that is the brand of stuff that I'm doing, and all the stuff that I'm doing now is the opposite. It is like, no, re-record, get it perfect, make sure that every moment lands, make sure that all this kind of stuff goes in there, and also it has a very specific voice. And so I tried to do it a bunch of times, and I tried to do kind of laid back. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the first podcast I ever did with Andrew. And Andrew is right now shaking his head yes. Because, man, at the first time that we recorded a podcast, there's like two or three episodes of the iTunes or the iTricks Magic Week in Review that are in a digital graveyard somewhere. Hopefully they don't exist anywhere. you know, at this point, I would only hope that they exist so it can be used as a teaching tool for other people that this is something that happens. But I remember I was listening to a lot of talk radio at the time, and I remember thinking, oh, this is the voice. This is how you do it. And we recorded, and oh my God, was it just like simultaneously boring and ear screechingly awful. Like, it was just the timing was way off. It was like listening to yourself on your answering machine for the first time.
I think and I remember sitting there in our sweaty little Margate, you know, office, yeah, and, you know, going over and over again. And the thing is we're both perfectionists and we're driving each other up the wall, you know. I'd be like, we got to do this again. It'd be frustrating, but you're like, yeah, I know we do, you know. And it was, yeah, this sort of being angry at, you know, not getting it right. But we were both in total agreement. Like, let's keep going over this several times. And
so
trying
you'd be
to,
doing like multiple takes on a given sentence or a topic.
We'd record the same podcast three times
over. Yeah. Wow. I mean, we did it two or three times before there was a confidence, because podcasting in general is a performative conversation, whether or not you realize it. You are doing things that are unnatural in speech to make it better to listen to. And the more you do it, the better you get at it and the more unconscious it becomes.
But these are your first podcasts, right, Justin?
This is the first podcast, right? And first, so we'd like, listen to anything. A million and you know, this was just the first step into it. So flash forward to this, you know, I'm recording it and I'm trying to do these kind of things. I'm trying to do these kind of vocal things that I know that I like. I want to emulate certain things. I want to not emulate in other things that I want to be differentiate myself from. And eventually the lesson was in the take that I like, was I just needed to trust myself. Like, I have a unique voice. I need to just polish it instead of pretending that I'm a good researcher who's going to now adopt this new persona to do you know, what I wanted to do. And so it's certainly a process, but man, I'll tell you what, that's the biggest thing for me is the lesson of done is better than perfect. It's just like, oh
yes. And but let me a funny little anecdote going back. This is what, 2006, when we first started working on the podcast. There was one podcast in particular that I'm like, listen to this, these guys are really, really good. This is the benchmark. This is where we want to try to get as good at, because I think they're like the best, the rapport, everything. Because these guys, Buzz Out Loud,
yep,
Tom Merritt,
Molly Wood, Veronica,
you know, now who have you done podcasts with? Everyone, or friends with, like, all of that's the funny, yeah, thing is we didn't know any of them. We had no idea who they were. We had no idea. I mean, just they're just voices, and it was a super popular podcast. You're like, oh, this is the one that, you know, these are the guys we want to be like. And now, you know, you co-host with Tom, you know, you're friends with Molly and Veronica and all. I mean, that's the sort of funny thing. Was it partially because you set your the bar, you looked at what they were doing, and they were doing a great job, and you set that bar up there. This is what you want to do. And look what happens. You know, you wake up one day and, you know, you're late to go do a podcast with Tom Merritt.
And in terms of,
yeah, yeah, no, look, it's, I mean, that journey has been great, but, you know, like everything, you're always defined by what you can do next and how you can take it forward, which was kind of the original, thing. Yeah, that we were talking about, but so much of it has been learned by, you know, watching the two of you guys put stuff together and expand the field, continue to play to your strengths.
Yeah, if you're in a position where you're like, yeah, I think I've got the elements I need, but I'm waiting for that magic thing that's going to tell me what will make it perfect. Shut up, go do it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there was a moment where when I was down in Austin and we shot the Modern Rogue episode where we talked about kind of a very specific part of the 1960s story that I'm going to tell. It was the first time that I kind of realized, like, what the hell am I? I mean, like, there's always going to be another book that I need to read. There's always going to be another thing. There's always going to be some fact that some nerd is going to hit me up and they're going to be right. And I'm going to have missed out on something, or one of my assumptions is going to be incorrect. And
Like I can't pad my future feelings with enough books for them to not be hurt. Like, I'm eventually going to fall into that bramble bush. And it was so easy and so fun to do that Modern Rogue episode where I could just be like, oh no, look, here's a story. And I know the beats and I know the funny parts and I know the gotcha moments and I know what I need to do, that it's like, and then that happened like right before we had this like month where I was on the road for like a month. So I couldn't do it, but now we're done. And now we're into this season where, that's the one thing, is just realizing, write it out, go do it, start rolling.
And like, you know, when it comes to the delivery stuff, I mean, I think you're right to like definitely trust yourself. I also think that, you know, you mentioned like if there's production stuff that's coming up and like reach out and send it to people to listen to. I'll happily listen to something. And, you know, if it's something about music, about editing, you know, like don't just keep it in a box and let yourself stew on stuff like that.
No, I'm not. I haven't sent it around just because I knew I wasn't ready to get the wheels rolling in October. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that the one thing I can't do is like when I bang this gong, we're getting it on. Like it is something where I am thinking about it every day. Like, this is the number one thing that I have to do. You know, the month of December is me packing orders for stickers or DIAF and recording this show and figuring out the technical elements of this show, and everything else is gonna, you know, take a little bit of a back burner. Not that I'm not gonna do the shows that I have, but like those are gonna be parceled a little bit more. And the thing that I wake up and go to sleep to is doing that. And I just didn't, this is a psychological thing, I didn't want to send it around to see what people thought, because I just knew I wasn't ready to be like, okay, well let's take that and roll. Like it, just because there was too much that I owed to everybody else around me. There was too much of the Politicon planning. There was too much of the Scoop Fest stuff. There was too much of going to, you know, visit my family and everything, where I just needed to have ducks in a row that I didn't want to take the steam away from it, which is something that I know Brian knows really well. It's like, there's so much in your life that is like robbing Peter to pay Paul on a daily basis in terms of like time and energy.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel great to not be able to overperform expectations for everyone. And, you know, hopefully we're entering that phase where, you know, we can, what I need is a handler, somebody to place me in front of the thing and a strict schedule and all that stuff.
Let me know how that works out, the search for that.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, we all want that person, and not your case. I mean, I know it's physically human, but I mean, like, before we find our thing, we often want the person to tell us what our thing should be. You know, we fall in love with these myths, these creation myths of people who are successful, because when they tell the stories, we hear these stories of like, oh, so-and-so was doing this, then they wrote this script for this, or they did a podcast with a friend and it was magic. And it's like, 6 years of other jobs, trying to do different things, struggling, near misses, complete failure, then lucky, you know, and lucky breaks happen to people who work hard a lot more often. And so that's the thing, you know, the factor. But we often get very hung up on these success stories of other people and don't realize that a lot of them are BS. It's BS. Is we want a narrative where we were destined for success, which, if those of us are struggling, we hear those and we feel like, well, it'll never work for me. You know, we want somebody to come along and say, and this is what you will be, you know, the good fairy from Pinocchio, the blue fairy from Pinocchio, to come grant you, you know, your purpose in life. It doesn't happen like that. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't. And, you know, I can think of, you know, a number of things in my life that were extremely contingent that could have gone one way or the other, but end of the day, pick a thing, you know?
Andrew, you tweeted something over the weekend, which was your first tweet that you made. After which was that?
So I went and I pulled, you know, you can download your entire, I was side jag, was working on a little machine learning project of like building a conversational bot, and I thought the what they did is they had like movie scripts, like questions and answers. I thought it was really a poor choice because it just, you read the individual responses and they seemed totally random. I said, oh, what if I pulled down my Twitter history and tried to do that, build a bot, Andrew, to respond to that stuff. And so I looked, pulled down my entire Twitter history. And then I looked at my first tweet. My first tweet ever was amusing. It was so hungry. So hungry. And then a little while later, I found out in like 2011, after I wrote my first novel, the first novel, which was Public Enemy Zero, and the tweet that I had from there. And it was, Bryce, do you have that there? It's just like probably like my third tweet. I mean, the most recent.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's it.
Finished second draft of my book. Tried to channel love child of Michael Crichton plus Stephen King. Told Justin R. Young, okay, to bury in backyard.
And so I gave Justin the book to read. And I'm like, yeah, dude, if this sucks, just let me know. Because I finished the novel. I'm like, now I know I can finish books. I knew I could finish a book. That was the most important thing for me. So I'm like, yeah, if this sucks, it's fine. I'll just write another book. I learned so much, you know. And then I gave it to Justin. Justin's like, yeah, no, I think you should put it out. I'm like, oh, okay. I'll put it out there.
I knew it was really. I mean, like that was even in the first draft of Public Enemy Zero, it was something special and very cinematic. And it really didn't change all that much from the version that's out there now and has been optioned multiple times and sold really, really well. And really is like, I mean, as important as Grendel Shadow was to you establishing yourself to our own audience as a writer, I think Public Enemy Zero was the first really big thriller announcement that's like, okay, you're this is something that the promise from that showed a way forward that you have continued to follow.
Yeah, and that was you don't know. I mean you never know. And like, you know, Brian's point about like done is better than perfect tomorrow. And that was, I had a book that I finished. It was, you know, the notes on it were good. Like, oh, people like this. People were good. You know, I was watching, and you never know what's going to happen. I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, and they talk about the song, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, and wanting to release it. And the record execs, like, you know, he knows how it really went down. Like, no, it's too long. It's too long. And, you know, and I kind of defend that point of view. When you're in the music industry, you hear a lot of great things you think are going to be big, and they're not. Mm-hmm. You know, and then some band says this thing, like, yeah, maybe it's good, but I don't think we want to stick our reputation on, you know, putting this thing out there and a 6-minute long song, or because you don't, nobody knows anything and you don't know. And if it meets a certain threshold, well, just get it out there, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't, like, that was, if I said, you know what, I'm going to work on my writing craft a while longer, maybe spend a year or two writing whatever, maybe the next book would have been great. But it turned out the next novel did really well. And my point is, like, if I hadn't released that, I don't know what would have happened, but that book got me my agent. That book got me my first film deal. You know, that gave me the energy to keep writing. And the novel I wrote that next year, you know, is the series that brought me my thriller finalist, my thriller award finalist, my Edgar nominations and all that. And it was like, I didn't know. Like, Blackfall, you know, Edgar finalist, you know, was one of four finalists for the Edgar Award, which is one of the best award you could, you know, hope for in mystery. I finished that book and I'm like, I guess it's good. I hope people like it. I mean, I'm not trying to be like false. I just didn't know. I did everything I did in my checklist of conflict, characters, this, like this, you know, Brian with like Modern Rogue has his checklist things to do. Justin, your podcast, you have this checklist of things to do, and you get to the end of it and you're like, well, did I do what I needed to do? And, you know, and then you get to the end of it, be like, is there more? Is there something I'm missing? And I did that book, and no, guess what? The book was fine.
And part of it, and part of creating, especially something regular or something you're going to do a lot of, whether it's videos or books or podcasts, is being able to understand what your checklist is, right? Like, mm-hmm. on Monday nights, we do, you know, 6 hours of podcasting, and then I go home and spend the next 6 hours publishing. And there are things that have to happen. And once all those things are done, I'm still like, I hope I got everything. And sometimes some whatever. But like, you it takes repetition to know all the things that you need to do in all the different places just on a execution level, you know, and then that's where trusting yourself comes into. It's like, okay, no, I've got this done. I did all the things that I need to do. I can't be second guessing myself. I need to, you can verify, you know, verify the work that you do, but not, so you can't spend forever second guessing yourself.
Yeah.
Yep. Real artistship.
Hey, man.
All right, guys, picks?
Yeah, man, I got a pick. I think it was last year I was able to give you my pick of a podcast called Dirty John, and I still think the podcast is wonderful, but now I get to say it again because it's a Bravo television series.
What?
Fictionalized. First episode is up on Bravo's YouTube channel.
Oh, my goodness.
The entire first episode. So
what's the elevator pitch on Dirty John? Because I remember you talking about it, but I don't remember the concept.
It's a true crime story, and the podcast is it's what Serial should have been. Like, imagine if Serial had stuck the landing, as riveting storytelling as Serial, only it absolutely sticks the landing to a degree that Serial could only aspire to do.
So it's like okay, it's a true crime murder.
Yes,
sort of story.
Yes.
Okay.
Character comes into someone's life, turns out to not be what he presents himself as. Things get increasingly more interesting from there. As you have to in a television show, you tell a story differently in a fictional television show than investigative podcast. So I know we always say watch the movie first, then read the book. I'm convinced that I'm enjoying the show more because I experienced the podcast. So maybe break with our traditional advice for this one, because then you don't have to wait for week after week.
Bravo seems like a weird choice for something like this.
Yep.
Because they mostly do unscripted reality or competition shows.
And that's the other thing, is that in the world of podcasts, Dirty John is a perfect chrome-like polish. It is note perfect at the top of the podcasting game. Mm-hmm. In the world of fictionalized television shows, Dirty John from episode one appears to be slightly better than Hallmark Movie Channel quality storytelling. Like I can tell I'm enjoying it because it's an excuse to revisit the story. So yeah. I would say do both. Listen to the podcast and then get to see people acting out what you heard in the podcast.
Okay, because at that point, it's just a reenactment.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
If I can piggyback on your pick,
sure.
I'm going to double down on Homecoming, another podcast adaptation, but this is an already fictionalized story being adapted by Amazon, directed by Sam Esmail of Mr. Robot.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Starring Julie Roberts, Bobby Cannavale is in there. It's really good. It's a fictionalized sort of thriller mystery sort of story. So there's not like a big murder mystery in it, but you are introduced to this psychiatrist who is working at Homecoming, a center for troops overseas returning home to kind of transition back into civilian life, and so you get to see some of the therapy sessions and a little bit of what life is like living in that facility, as well as for her being a therapist who lives outside of the facility, kind of dives into the mystery of like, well, you know, the company that runs the facility is this big pharmaceutical concern. Like, what are they trying to get out of this? And there's a sort of split timeline that it tells in parallel of an investigator investigating what happened with the Homecoming facility, and so you kind of get a merge, or like a you sort of burn the candle from both ends as you try to reach the climax point of what really happened with Homecoming. It's really cool and really well done. Like if Dirty John is like the height of podcast production, like Homecoming is beautiful. It is just stunning, and like these huge two story sets of these buildings that they made, and all the really good motion control camera work that they it's gorgeous. So that's my pick, is Homecoming on Amazon Prime.
Awesome.
Finally got around to watching Ant-Man and the Wasp. I really like Ant-Man and the Wasp. I think Marvel's in such a great position when the psychedelic Honey, I Shrunk the Kids caper movie with a great
cast is like this kind of afterthought, even to me, because I didn't see it in theaters. Like, I normally see the Marvel movies. But I thought it was just so fun. Just a fun, inventive, clever movie, and everything I wanted from it, I got.
It's neat because it's like, you know, after Infinity War, I mean, you know, people are like, oh, how are they going to do Ant-Man and Wasp after this heavy thing? How are we going to do this? Like, man, Marvel knows what they're doing. Marvel's pretty smart.
Yeah, look, it's a wackety schmackety caper, but at the end of the day, like, I'm here for the things get small, things get big. Everybody has a fun time. You're never at a point where you're ahead of the story. Like, even without spoiling much, there's the running theme is that a gigantic building is like a carry-on on wheels, you know? Like, and so it's like, you never really know, like, oh, okay, well, I know where this story, where our hero's HQ can literally be anywhere, and the plot revolves around creating a little Micronaut experience, like, into the Phantom Realm. I know where this is going to end. And meanwhile, the fact that everything is, it's got heart where it needs to have heart. It has tension where it needs to have tension. And at the end of the day, look, it's a fun kind of lighthearted caper, which I very much enjoyed.
Yeah. I have a software pick kind of thing. I've been having a lot of fun, like, playing around with machine learning and neural networks and stuff. And I'm just scratching the surface, trying to learn how to do stuff. And I mean, I'm a chimpanzee with a bent stick trying to stick it into a termite mound. That being said, there's a lot of really cool tools out there. Apple at the Worldwide Developers Conference unveiled a thing. If you're familiar with Xcode or doing that, they have a thing called Xcode Playgrounds where you can test out different kinds of code. And they have a thing now called Create ML, which basically means that you put one line that says, you know, Create ML, import this, then another line that says GUI interface, and the next thing you know, on the side of the window is you can drag folders of images, and you can do stuff like image classification and build a little model that will, like, hot dog, not a hot dog. You can do style transfer, transfer one style to another. And so really easy to do, four lines of code, and you're starting to make, you know, neural networks and stuff. There's other cool stuff. Google has TensorFlow, which is great. CreateML is cool because it's the easiest, a few lines of code, everything's done. They have an open source thing called Turi Create, which works on Python. And I know for most people are going, like, I don't know what these words mean. If you have an interest in computers or machine learning, the tools and stuff are out there. And if you have interest in, it's so accessible, so accessible. There's a Google course on machine learning, which I'll probably do maybe in the next week, and maybe I'll talk about it, like, it's aimed at everybody. So I'll try that and, you know, come back, because I would like to get more people to have an interest in this to go take a look at it, because these are the technologies that are going to change the world. It's like talking about the internet in 1991, you know, it's like that. And then all of a sudden everything will be everywhere. And then, you know, the more people understand how these things work, the better.
Okay. Right on.
Push. Go. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.